This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Perhaps no one man has had a greater impact on world events in the past few years than Mikhail Gorbachev. My guest, Dusko Doder, is the author of a new political biography of Gorbachev. Doder was Moscow bureau chief for the Washington Post from 1968 to 71 and from 1981 to 85. He went back to the Soviet Union on temporary assignment at least once a year during the rest of the 80s. Although he didn't know Gorbachev personally, Doder was in the Soviet Union during Gorbachev's initial rise to power. One of the most significant things to happen to Gorbachev last week took place not at the summit, but back in the Soviet Union. It was the election of Boris Yeltsin as chairman of the Russian Republic's Supreme Soviet. Some analysts have said that the only reason Gorbachev has been able to stay in power with things unraveling around him is that there's been no alternative to him. I asked Dusko Doder if Yeltsin might be that alternative.
Well, first, I think there's always an option, but, you know, we don't realize it. And second, I don't think Mr. Yeltsin is an option, but Mr. Yeltsin is sort of the Jesse Jackson of Soviet politics, who is going to create a lot of problems for Gorbachev, and who personally is now more popular than Gorbachev because he's telling the people, read my lips, no price increases.
When you say he's the Jesse Jackson of Soviet politics, what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that he poses the same set of problems for Mr. Gorbachev the way Jesse Jackson posed it for Governor Dukakis. In other words, there's an element of spoiler there, too, an element of pressure, the element of genuine issues that he wants addressed. But Mr. Yeltsin himself has no program as such. His program is fairly rudimentary. And yet he's very popular, and of course he is creation of Gorbachev, and in a sense he's a testimony that some basic rudimentary democratic procedures have been instituted in the Soviet Union.
Well, Yeltsin may now be Gorbachev's biggest rival, but he was once Gorbachev's protege. Why did Gorbachev bring him to Moscow and put him in charge of city government?
I think that Yeltsin is known as a non-corrupt person, an efficient person who ran Sverdlovsk, which is a big industrial city. He's sort of a decent guy, Boy Scout a bit. And he was brought in the first wave of officials who came in to clean up the place and clean up the mess. And he took over the most corrupt of all organizations, which was the Moscow Communist Party organization, and he tried to straighten it out. But he did not really, although, you know, I personally sympathize with Mr. Yeltsin and his populist vision and so forth, he was not a very effective administrator because he's the guy who wants to do everything himself. And over the period of time, I think Mr. Gorbachev protected him. He still remains a member of the Central Committee, although he was not, when he was ousted as an alternate member of the Politburo, he was given a big job as Deputy Minister of Construction, which is a big ministry, and remained a Secretary of the Central Committee. But Mr. Yeltsin now feels and says that he's no longer a communist, he's sort of a social democrat. And I think that in that sense, as an idea, he presents an option that it's going to be an emerging social democratic party in the Soviet Union.
Why did Gorbachev force Yeltsin's resignation from the Politburo in 1987?
I don't think that he forced his resignation, but rather that Gorbachev himself was forced to agree to accept his resignation, because Yeltsin complained about the pace of perestroika, and he said that it was not fast enough, not radical enough, and that at that time, number two man in the Politburo, Ligachev, who was the standard bearer of the conservatives, was the main obstacle to it. In other words, it was a personal attack on the number two man, the leading conservative. The Politburo was divided on the issue, and a majority of the people in the Politburo felt that Mr. Yeltsin had gone too far. And Gorbachev agreed to have him ousted from the Politburo.
How did Yeltsin make a political comeback after he was ousted from the Politburo in 87?
Well, I think that we sort of say that he made a political comeback, but what happened is that the system, the Soviet, Mr. Gorbachev has instituted political reforms. I mean, he has not been successful in instituting economic reforms, but in the realm of politics, he has been very successful. And he has broken up the hold of the Communist Party, as you know. I think his greatest accomplishment so far, when he peaked, I think, was in February of this year, when he had the Central Committee formally abandon, you know, Communist Party's monopoly on power. And he has instituted the rudimentary elements of some sort of pluralistic political system. And this is where Yeltsin fits, because he has been maligned by the majority of his colleagues in the Politburo, and he has come back with a vengeance. And he is popular because he's an articulist, honest guy who is, who is articulating the feelings of the common people. He's popular.
So do you think it's ironic in a way that Gorbachev's reforms made it possible for his rival to get into power?
Of course, but this is normal. I think that the very people, for instance, who benefited most from Gorbachev, and say, for instance, Lithuanians, you know, 2 years ago, if you talked about Lithuanian independence, it would be crazy because everybody said it's impossible. He made it possible, but they will destroy him. People like Lithuania, you know, all the people who benefit from Gorbachev in the end are going to destroy him. And that's why I feel he's sort of like a doomed figure, because he wants so much. He's already a historical figure because he has made, has changed the world and he has changed his country. And yet he seems to be bound to fail because he has unleashed forces that he can no longer control.
Do you think that that would have happened with anybody who was trying to create the reforms that Gorbachev created? Or do you think it's representative of a shortcoming in his ability to lead his people or to understand them?
I think it's inevitable. Anybody who did this would face the same kinds of problems, because what you have is you have a federal state based on fraud, on a lie. It's a fraudulent federation. That's one. Two, you have an economy that doesn't work, and it's a command economy. And how do you change it? Because for 70 years, the people have been told to believe in one thing, and all of a sudden, you have to go and change everything, you know, from the bottom up. So you have this inability to deliver meat and potatoes to the people's table, which is one. And on the other hand, you have you want to create a genuine federation, but in the meantime, people's aspirations have come to the fore. It seems to me the question of Lithuania is almost, you know, there's no way but that Lithuania is going to be an independent country sooner or later. The question is how and when.
My guest is Desko Doder, and he's former Moscow bureau chief for The Washington Post and the author of a new biography on Gorbachev called Gorbachev, Heretic in the Kremlin. Do you think Gorbachev's leadership style has been changing? For instance, May Day, when he was jeered, after that he allowed legislation making it a crime to slander the leader of the Soviet Union. Was that out of character for him? To do something as authoritarian, is that?
That's an act of anger, really, because it's, what has happened is that people have now been deprived of this ideal, and they look back and they say, hey, what have we been doing for 70 years? We have been deceived. And he himself has held up a vision now, but this was 5 years ago. They listened to him with, a gaping mouth, because he really was he's a spellbinding orator and a very charming guy. And he charmed the whole country, and you offered them a vision of the future, what's going to happen, how they all have to work, and so forth. But 5 years later, there's no meat, no potatoes, no bread. I mean, you have to stand in line. And ultimately, in every country, people vote with their pocketbooks. So they're unhappy.
And he's angry at them for being unhappy with him.
I think this was an act of there's a authoritarian streak to him, because he's inherited the throne of the Tsars in Russia. I think he's the first leader in Russian history who actually wants to get elected, because in Russia the rulers either ruled as the representatives of Almighty God, or as, the people who possessed the knowledge of the communist mythology, and as such they knew the future. And here you have a man who actually wants to get elected and who wants to change the system. I think it's a hard thing to he's high-minded. He wants to do the best by his people, and then they jeered him, and it's a hard thing to take. I mean, in some ways, Mr. Gorbachev is similar. There's an element of Jimmy Carter about him. Man who from the provinces who comes to the big city. He's knowledgeable. He really wants to do things. He thinks the world is made out of wax that he can mold. And then he faces these problems which are far more intractable. And there's also an element of Richard Nixon, who he's going abroad to find sustenance, to get approval, because in his own country he's jeered on May Day, and he comes to San Francisco or to Minneapolis or Washington. People love him. And I think it must psychologically, Nixon in 1974, at the time of Watergate, he went to Russia and to the Middle East, and people loved him. In Egypt, he had a tremendous reception. But at home, he couldn't get out of the White House.
Let's talk about Gorbachev's rise to power. Now, you begin your book about Gorbachev with a story about his parents. His father was a peasant farmer. And when Stalin was forcing peasant farmers off the land, how was Gorbachev's family affected?
Well, it's an interesting aspect of his life that his grandfather was arrested and sent to Siberia along with millions of peasants who, for one reason or another, either opposed collectivization or did something wrong in that period of, in the early 30s. And the Gorbachevs were... come from the stock of free peasants, because in Russia 95% of the peasantry was were serfs until 1862, when Alexander II abolished serfdom. But in the outlying reaches of the empire, they were settled during Catherine the Great's rule. The peasants were free, and they were given freedom and land to till the soil in exchange for serving the empire when the enemy attacks the empire and so forth. So you can see in Gorbachev's behavior when you watch him that he's a free man in a sense compared to Brezhnev or Chernenko or whatever. This man is free, but I think that this trauma of from early on he realized that there were some really serious flaws in the Stalinist system, and I think that Gorbachev was a genuine anti-Stalinist from the very early age, and we know from his classmates and friends in school that this was the case. And yet, as an ambitious young man, he sublimated this, I guess that's what we would say, and became a party member and a faithful soldier of the party, and rose in the ranks.
Gorbachev spent 23 years as a party official in Stavropol. Where is Stavropol, and what was his leadership style when he was there? Was he just a party man, or did he try to institute reforms?
Stavropol is one of the most beautiful areas of Russia, and it's not the part of historic Russia, but it was conquered in the 18th century, and it captured the imagination in the novels of Tolstoy, Pushkin, Lermontov, Caucasus with its wild mountains and Muslim tribes and subtropical climate. The Russians like it. Plus, all Russians who could would always vacation down there. And when he became first secretary there, I think there's an element of chameleon about him, like in every politician. He knew how to charm people, how to maneuver himself into a position. And his great fortune is that the top Soviet leaders every year would come to Stavropol on vacation. And once he became the first secretary, or sort of like a governor of the province, he was their host. So he met all the top leaders and was able to make contact, and one of the crucial contacts was with Andropov, who was then KGB chief.
And Andropov was really a mentor to Gorbachev, yes?
Right.
Since Andropov was head of the KGB, what kind of ties did that give Gorbachev to the KGB?
I think that Gorbachev inherited Andropov's constituency, which was the KGB, younger intellectuals, younger army officers, people in the institutes, people who wanted some change. In Russia, you have had a change of society in a sense that now you have a very large professional class. You know, you have something like 4 or 5 million doctors. You have millions of engineers. You have, you know, literacy is fairly high. These people actually would see where things are going, and they're going in the wrong way, and that something has to be done. I think Andropov's patronage was crucial to Mr. Gorbachev, because as the KGB chief, Andropov was, at least people believed, he knew everybody and he knew everything. Of course, you can't do that, but this was the belief. And as such, they actually took him on face value as a man who was going to continue reforms, but in a sense that Andropov started them. But Gorbachev has gone much farther and with far greater vigor than anybody anticipated.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Desko Doder, and he's the author of a new political biography of Gorbachev. What do you see in the future of the USSR? Do you think it's possible for it to remain as an actual union? Or do you think that there'll be so much breaking apart and secession that the whole shape of the Soviet Union will change soon?
Well, I think that the Soviet Union has two basic problems that will keep it in a turmoil for at least this decade, if not for into the next century. And that is the ethnic problem and the problem of changing the economy. I think that in any case, the Soviet Union is no longer a superpower, because it has lost this mission in the world. The idea of communism is no longer there. What I feel is that the country is going to be preoccupied in looking inward. And as such, you know, it's going to be a problem for the United States to kind of, you know, you can have superpower only if there's another superpower there. You know, you cannot be one superpower in the world. And we will have to also to find a mission for, say, our alliance. Well, you know, the Warsaw Pact does not exist anymore. NATO is there, but, you know, you have to find a mission for it. But at any rate, I see it as this is going to be a period of decline, with Japan and Germany becoming major powers, and in a sense, the United States, the decline in American power.
I wonder what effect you think it's having on Soviet politics to have personality be at the forefront of politics the way it's been lately, the personality of Gorbachev and now Yeltsin, and their personalities being of great interest to Americans, you know, as well as Soviets. You know, you certainly didn't see that with Brezhnev.
No, I think there's been a change in the system as such, because all of a sudden you have an emergence of a number of leaders. The new mayor of Moscow is a reformist leader, Gavril Popov, the mayor of Leningrad. There are lots of people who are promising, who are reformists, who are more Western-oriented, I mean, intellectually. And I think still that the most important issue is the economy, and whether Gorbachev and his people can turn the economy around. And I think the Washington summit did not give Gorbachev what he actually wanted to get. The rest of the trip gave him a little bit. I think the American business community was far more receptive. And I think that also it was important for him to be seen back home as a man who was respected in America.
You were based in the Soviet Union several years, 81 to 85, then off and on you'd go there to report through the 80s. Were you sorry that you weren't there on a more full-time basis as Gorbachev emerged in power, you know, in the last 5 years?
No, in short, no. I think the work has become so difficult. See, in the past, Russia was a place where there was no information, and we had to scrounge around and engage in practically detective work to get pieces of information. Now it's a place where you are inundated by information and different views. And see, in Beijing, where I live, we can pick up Soviet television just like, you know, it's a $20 attachment to the antenna, and you pick up the Soviet television because it's close to the border. And it's you have a feeling that, you know, the sort of CBS 60 Minutes is every day, you know, investigative programs, all sorts of interesting things. After the main news program, for instance, a priest would come 20 minutes doing a sermon on the importance of charity. You know, the press that you read, the number of different views. So work has become very difficult, and it's very difficult to do a good job out of Russia now.
But you're going to be going to Eastern Europe to report from there and to write books. Why are you going there?
I think that, you know, in a sense, what's happening today is in the world is that we're going back to the 1930s, in a sense, in terms of political alignments and so forth. And I think that the area of potential crises is in the Balkans. And, if there's a military conflict anywhere in Europe anytime soon, my prediction is it's going to be between Romania and Hungary over Transylvania. You have many of these old feuds there. The question of Yugoslavia is not quite clear. You know, the borders are here and there. And so I think that, you know, this is what interests me. I'd like to see what's happening there, and that's where the story is going to be.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Desko Doder's new book is Gorbachev, Heretic in the Kremlin. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.